This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. We want to welcome you to today's show. This is Baseball Outside the Box, the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. And I am your host, Pete Caliendo. I'm back from Havana, Cuba for my eighth time, but this time it was a historical event with the International Sports Group Coaches Educational Program. We had 60-plus coaches in Latino Americano Stadium where the MLB team, the Tampa Rays, play the Cuban national team. We are in the same field. It is an outstanding stadium. The coaches loved it. They were focused. These Cuban coaches really want to learn. We had some classroom work where you can just tell, man, they were serious and they wanted to get down to work. And we had not only work, but we had a lot of fun. I want to thank the Cuban Baseball Federation for allowing me to be the guest instructor for the whole period there, and also to discuss and talk at their conference, which is a sports conference for all sports. That was also a lot of fun. Hey, listen, we are going to have an exciting show. We're going across the pond to our great friends in Great Britain and someone who has worked in the development of multiple sports. And you know we talk about this a lot. We love multiple sports because we think we can learn from them, and is now the senior baseball national team in UK, Lloyd Williams. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Lloyd before we start. First, I'm going to cover one thing that I want everybody, our listeners anywhere in the world, even though we're putting together teams from the U.S., we do have international players join us. If you want to join Caliendo Sports USA baseball teams traveling this summer all over the world from Japan, Italy, Cuba, Dominican Republic, Australia, if you're a coach or a player any age that would like to join our staff, like to join our team, just email me at petercaliendo@icloud.com, or you can check it on the show notes. It will be there, and you can email me. If you want to experience international baseball and the cultural aspect of traveling around the world. All right, let's get started. Now, we are continuing our discussion by reaching out around the world to countries who are on the rise. And today, we're going to discuss evidence-based practice with anecdotal real-life experience and the results across multiple sports. I'm excited about this because I think I'm always learning. You heard the show where I learned from my buddy who's been in professional hockey. We're always cross-training. And we're also going to cover how to look at combining research with reality to give coaches an educated and practical take-home from this particular talk. Our guest, Lloyd Williams, and what I love about Lloyd is that he brings all the different aspects of sports because he's been involved in so many sports. So we're going to talk to him about all the sports. But let me tell you real quick a little bit about him. As far as baseball, he's worked with and currently working with the Great Britain baseball team, the senior team, and also he's worked with for 6 years with all the different age groups. Now he's with the senior team along with the World Baseball Classic team, and that's where I ran into him in World Baseball Classic. He's traveled on seven international baseball tours, worked within professional football with seniors and the 18U's, the Great Britain team sailing team at the youth level, providing strength and conditioning support along with fitness testing. He's worked with golfers from ages 16 to 18 who want to turn pro, and along with an adult professional golfers, he's worked with them. Now he supported one of them in the European Tour card. And finally, a sport close to baseball, he developed two international cricketers who have gone on to play at the best university in the country. I want to welcome Lloyd Williams. Lloyd, how you doing? I know it's a little later there at night.
Yeah, very well, thank you. Yeah, Halloween here as well as it is back there for you.
You know, for some reason I forgot it's Halloween all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Kids are going crazy over here.
Yeah, it's about to start here too, so I figured you're almost at the end there. Well, let me tell you, we're excited because we love talking to other countries. We know Great Britain has done a great job. You can tell by the World Baseball Classic, but it obviously started at the younger levels. Tell us about what you're doing with the Great Britain teams and, how some of the things that you guys might be doing at the younger levels that's produced some of the older players.
Yeah, so really for us, contact time is very limited It's not a full-time program. A lot of our kids will just play in the summer, have maybe the odd winter practice in a sports hall because the weather here isn't suitable for baseball, I guess, like it is in certain parts of America. But we have the sports halls, but obviously we don't have any indoor facilities. So kids are kind of where they train twice a week with Coach Carroll, who's done podcasts with you before, and Coach Linton. They meet up in London, so maybe 15 kids will get baseball three times a week. And then others are on distant programs where there'll be set drills and videos and they just have to practice in their own time. But with regards to the national team, that's basically when we go away on a tour, the kids learn so much because they are immersed in I guess, the high school environment. A lot of our kids don't play baseball day in, day out. They might play twice, three times a week max. So all of a sudden we go away for a 10-day period and these kids just learn the game and they have to learn quickly because some of the teams we play, like Holland, Spain, they play in day in, day out. And even the French have their own professional academy now, which is full-time for these kids. So really for us, it's trying to teach kids how can we make kids better within a week. And then the technical work is kind of left to their own devices. And then with regards to sports science, they go through a lot more movement pattern based stuff to try and make them more athletic. Because we find that kids in England or the UK with regards to baseball, generally kids who haven't had much success in other big sports like football over here and rugby and cricket, they've kind of not really excelled in those sports. So they come and they give baseball a go and all of a sudden there's a lot less participation levels and they get success. And then they generally just stick to baseball. They don't try and play other sports. So we have to try and really work on their movement mechanics to try and make them more athletic.
You know, Lloyd, I know something. Now, your specialty is strength and conditioning and also sports science. So that's a great combination because working both those together, I can see how when you're talking about movement patterns, you know, I know in the old days, even in the U.S., we're still calling them sometimes mechanics. But yeah. Explain how, you know, the importance between both of them, you know, the ability to be strong, but at the same time accomplish those patterns.
Yeah, so one of the real things that we generally find is the ability to hip hinge. So many kids cannot push their bum back towards a wall if they're standing a foot away from the wall. Just this inability to control their upper and lower body is just some of these kids find really difficult. Yet when they throw a baseball, it looks okay. Doesn't look great, but then all of a sudden you get them to see, can you differentiate between your upper and lower body? Can you control your lower body without having to move your upper body? And a lot of kids we've found really struggle with differentiating through the brain, the upper and lower body. So hip hinging is one of these things we really see that kids struggle with, just the inability to fire their glutes and separate their upper and lower body. And then when you break down the swing, if you can't separate your upper and lower body, you're hitting swings all over the place. You can't time anything. So we've really worked on trying to get kids to understand the separation between upper and lower body and then learning to fire the glutes. So loads of your squats and your elevated split squats and lunge patterns, really then we found them have really helped to help to fire the glutes and get kids to understand the separation between upper and lower body, then the coaches come in and go, wow, I can work with this kid a lot better because they can differentiate between their upper and lower body. It's easy. When I want to get a kid to move this arm in this direction or this leg in this direction, they find it so much easier because they understand their limbs. Because when kids go through puberty, they lose everything with regards to coordination. I mean, if you look at some kids who are 14, 15, in a high school program, when they were 12, they may have been the absolute stud, the best kid on the team. Then all of a sudden, they go to puberty and you're like, this kid cannot, he hasn't got a clue. Mm. It's not the kid's fault at the end of the day, it's just growing. And you just have to help these kids, get these kids again to relearn their limbs and then get them back playing. And eventually, it'll be better. But you just don't want to lose the kid out of the sport, which is what can happen when they go through puberty.
Absolutely, because then they feel like they're starting to fail a little bit. Now, Lloyd, when you talk about what you guys are doing. Are those two different things? So are you working with the players on understanding the separation and the strength, and then the coaches take over in the movement patterns?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So everything technical based with regards to swing and stuff like that, that's all down to the coaches. But my job is to make sure that the coaches can coach the kids. So when there's a problem, the coach knows what's going on and he can fix that kid with a lot more ease than previously, where he's been like, I can't get this kid to do this. This kid can't find this right arm slot. Well, it's just because the kid couldn't find that because he didn't understand where his limb was. He didn't have any control over his limb. So we try and teach the kids to control their limbs. So then the coaches can come in and add the technical input of, we need to work on this and that for this kid.
Excellent. And every kid is different. So, I mean, there might be weaknesses and strengths, and you have to identify those?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we put them through a basic fitness test, and then certain ones who we like or we see real, like, potential for the youth, the senior team, they'll go through a sort of a screening process with regards to how they move. So they'll go through basic fitness tests, which MLB provide us with. Mm-hmm. It's the 5-10-5, the 200 shuttle, standing long jump, vertical jump. And I think that's it. And the dashes, your up to 30 meter dash. So 10, 15, however you want to break it down, 5 mm-hmm. meters, however you want to break it down. But they do them. And then the ones that we like, especially pitchers, anyone who's a pitcher will generally go for a bit more of a screening process. Just to try and look at what we've got. There's one lad who we spent a lot of time with just because his scapulars were all over the place. He had no real control over them, but he threw hard. Threw hard with no real coaching, was a cricketer, played good standard of cricket. Brother's a professional soccer player over here. Dad was a professional cricketer. Kind of had the right work ethic in his head. And we looked at him and was like, we don't understand how you throw hard. Because his mechanics weren't great. He was new to the game, but he just had this raw ability. And then he had a lot of injuries with his shoulder. And then we just put him for a big screening process, understood how his shoulder worked, where his restriction in movement was, worked on us through throwing drills, gave him some ability stuff. And yeah, and his velocity went up. And it wasn't really a lot of work. It was about just five or six exercises every day for 6 weeks. And then mobility was better, and then he could throw more without getting tired and fatigued. And then the coaches could work on his arm slot, and it all sort of fell into place for him, which was good.
And you find, something that we, a big discussion here in the U.S., I want to get your opinion on it, especially from a sports science standpoint. You hear a lot about, in the old days, we did a lot of repetition. When we're talking about movement, I'm going to jump the movement pattern for a second. We talk about a lot of repetition in a row. You know, now you're hearing that a lot of repetition possibly is not necessarily as good as, you know, doing 2-3 and then changing the actual drill that you're doing, as far as quantity. Now, you look at the Japanese, you know, they go quality and they go quantity. Yeah, now, then you look at the Dutch and they've changed their process, and you're starting to see some U.S. coaches do that too. Well, where sports science fit in this?
I think it comes down to understanding your athlete. I think quantity may work for certain kids. The robust kids might be able to handle it. You know, the ones who you know are strong and quite tough skinned. You know, we'll know what the difference is between being injured and being sore. And then I think quality always has to have a place. But then you could go, well, after throwing 60, 70 pitches, you're tired, you're fatigued, and that's what quantity gives you. If you do lots, you get tired, but then you'd say, well, that replicates towards the end of a game or the end of a series. I think for me, you've got to find the balance, and it might be that your quantity happens pre-season, but your quality, you're highlighting more quality during the season when you're fatigued and tired and you've got loads of games going on. Then you might go, right, we're going to do 6 reps, good quality. But then in the off season, it might be 15, 20 reps because you've not got the fatigue. And I think it's I think a good coach will find the balance for each player and understand what each player can have. I mean, we've had kids that you define them as soft. You know, they're always sore. They're always injured. Well, that kid, he can't do the quantity. It's not for him. He has to go, here's eight, you've got eight reps, make them the best eight reps of your life. Every time he does a drill, you've got eight reps. Some kids, they go all day, not a problem. And I think as a coach, that's where it's understanding your players and also in understanding where they are in the season would be what I would personally like to implement with that. Because I think both have very valid points.
Sure. All right, now let's jump with that in mind. Your training, I know you said you don't have a lot of time to train indoors, but as far as facilities, but you get a chance to train outdoors. What's your balance when it comes to practices and games? I know you only have so many games, but how do you tailor this to make sure that your kids are getting enough of practice development, but at the same time getting enough game experience?
For us, game experience is just so hard to get. It just isn't enough baseball being played. And that's where the tournaments, when these kids go away, they change massively. I mean, it's like night and day, just going away. Little League, it has its pros and its cons. But when these kids go away and play the European Little League to qualify for the American one, they come back so much better players just from having that maybe six games in a 10-day space. And that's where our kids learn the most. And it's the same with the national team competitions. When these kids go away, they learn so much. So really, they might get 2 to 3 of those 10-day periods through their season. Then they're playing once a week. So really, off-season, like which is now, which has started middle of September, say, that's when off-season started. So it's all indoor, T-work, nets, sort of work, and then just throwing in and around a sports hall. No real long toss work yet. And then when it comes to the season will start off one game a week every Sunday. And then hopefully the players we play, we'd like to think in the better teams, will have European club championships, and then the youth ones will have international, or seniors will have international competitions. And then you're hoping that the younger ones will have a little league or something like that where they can go and play 10 days. The American schools in England, there's a handful, 5 or 6, and they offer baseball a game a week plus 2 practices, which again, you can tell the kids that attend them because they just get more hours. Mm-hmm. But for us, the kids learn so much on a tour. I mean, it's crazy how much they learn because they really want to be there. And it's not day in, day out. I think when it's day in, day out for kids, they take it for granted that they have baseball day in, day out. But when our kids don't have that and they go away for a week, they literally absorb everything. They just cannot wait to get better.
Well, I'll tell you what, from experience, I can tell you, because I've been there and I've worked with some of the kids, and, it's amazing how focused they are, how much they want to learn. And I got to tell you this, you hit it right on the button, because a lot of parents out there, in my introduction, I mentioned Caliendo Sports International. We travel around the world. This is just for fun, for the international experience, where kids, in the U.S., a lot of them aren't going to make the national team. But yet, at this type of competition, they're able to at least experience their initial level. We don't have time to practice. There's a lot of cost to it. We can't add practices. So kids arrive in the Dominican Republic or Japan, and, the first day we might have a little bit of a workout. Next day, boom, we're right in the competition against some real strong teams. And it is amazing. You hit it on the button. It's amazing how they have to learn fast. They have to communicate. If they're shy, they got no choice but to start communicating with their partners, with their teammates. They learn much faster. So there is a great benefit to that. So there's always a way to look at the positives. And I think that's a big positive. Now, I want to get into warm-ups, because I think warm-ups are important, whether they be in practice or whether they be in prior to games. I want to hear your advice on warm-ups nowadays, because in the old days we did some things that, there's a lot better things to do now. How do you guys handle warm-ups for your players prior to games? What's the basis for what you do?
Last couple of years until this year, we just did the generic what you see everywhere you go. Exercises between two cones, have a little jog, exercises between the cones, you know, like your lunges, your sumo squats, hamstring walks. And basically I noticed it, when you work in Europe, people will follow other things because they don't really know, especially if you play a country like Lithuania or Ukraine, very small, no real funding. They just watch what's going on and they take it. And we went on a few tours and we just did this warm up in between the cones and it was fine. It was dynamic, which is what you want. It increases power output and it will have a reduction of injuries, which is basically all a warm up needs to do is make sure they don't get hurt during the game. And can we make them physically prepared to play their best, which is essentially what the dynamic stretches did and that warm up did. But I had a look around and the coaches just turned around to me this year and was like, Lloyd, let's do something different. I don't know what you're going to do, Lloyd, but I don't want to see lines. It's boring and everyone's doing it now. And I was like, you're right. It has to change because if everyone's doing it, it's wrong because we need to evolve. It doesn't make it. It's just boring. It was just boring to watch. Kids were bored, especially at 18 years of age, even the 23s. It'd be boring. So we changed it up this year. We decided to play a game. It was, you divide it up, two teams, caps v non-caps, so you don't need any more equipment, one baseball and your gloves. And we set a target man, so you pick a player, could be any kid in your team, could be, I used to pick the shy kid to start with. I always would pick a shy kid who wasn't really involved in the team yet or struggled to fit in, he would be my target player. And you'd have one for each team, and the team would have to make four passes. Then they'd have to try and get the ball to their target player to score a point. So they're just throwing the ball around the field, trying to create space. But if you had the ball in your glove and the opposition touched you with their glove, it was a turnover. So the other team would get the ball. And then also if the ball hit the ground, it was a turnover. So the other team would get the ball. And I mean, I actually got in trouble for this game because it went onto the infield dirt during a team was playing BP with the under-23s. Because these 23-year-old players just became obsessed with this game. And all of a sudden, my aim was this game was to increase heart rate and get people moving around and start talking to one another. And these kids were screaming, shouting, yes, ball, 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 yes, release. And all of a sudden, these kids were trying these spin moves when they're catching the ball. They're getting the ball out of their glove quickly. And the coaches come up to me and go, Lloyd, these are all qualities we've been wanting these kids to do in drills for the last 3 or 4 years, yet we can't get them. When we hit them fungos time and time again, we can't get them to transfer the ball out of their glove this quick. Why are they doing it now? And it wasn't that it had, I didn't even want it to do that. All I wanted it to do was to get kids running around and get kids talking and increase team chemistry. And all of a sudden the coach is like, this is brilliant. They're trying these spin moves. And all we did was essentially create a game. Doesn't matter what your game is. You could play ultimate frisbee if you wanted. You could play in England, the cricket teams, they play soccer. Before they warm up or do their warm-up game is, they play soccer matches. And the England team, they set up so they have fancy football team amongst themselves. So they can buy and sell players and they have a tally of top goal scorers and stuff. And those, as an England national cricket team, that's what they do before they do their stretches. And all it is just to get the heart rate up and let people have fun, because warm-ups, in my opinion, have become this overthought process where it's got to be scientific. It doesn't. It doesn't have to be overly scientific. Let people have fun. And then, so we play the game for around, well, we say 5 minutes. It always goes to 10 minutes. Because they're gonna love it. And then we break up into two groups. So one team, so they say it's the cap team, they will do 7 or 8 dynamic stretches. And the other team will do their band work, so the J-band stuff. We have a set program that they all do. Then we all meet together and we do a few more stretches together, work the upper body, 5 or 6 dynamic stretches for the upper body, and then we do 5 or 6 sprints, and then they play catch. And the warm-up is tops 20 minutes, generally 15 to 17 minutes. And I just want kids to talk, or adults, to talk and just have fun, because when I worked in Brooklyn, players don't warm up. And then you ask these minor leaguers, why aren't you warming up? Well, it's boring. I do this day in, day out. But it doesn't have to be boring. It could be the highlight of your day. And it doesn't take much to go, let's create a fun game for people to play. Because all you got to do is increase the heart rate. You can do the dynamic stretches afterwards. And if they don't want to do it at the pro level, then that's their choice. But at youth level, coaches always struggle. The warm-up, oh, it's the same thing day in, day out, day in, day out. Change it. Do something different. Be crazy.
That's awesome. Love it. And, you know, the benefit you have and something I want to really discuss is, you know, you've trained in multiple sports, as I listed in the introduction, you know, whether it be cricket or golf or, you know, any other sport. What you obviously took some of this from those sports. What else have you taken from other sports and learned from other sports that can be implemented or has been implemented into baseball?
So for us, really, it's a lot of the agility stuff, the ability to change direction. Mm-hmm. We learn a lot from, I don't know, say a game like soccer, where the average sprint distance is, say, less than 6 or 7 meters, which I think is just learning how to get people to change direction very quickly has been really key. Because in football, they do it naturally. And in baseball, you're always looking to improve it. So just finding, like, teaching the cut is really important. And things like running an arc and things like that have become, I don't know, you look at what they do in football, and like to turn a defender is a very short, sharp movement. And that's what I've kind of taken from football. And then I guess with sailing, it's understanding pull and push. You underestimate that you have to pull and push to do everything. So with sailing, obviously, it's pulling the ropes, letting ropes down and stuff like that. So that's what I've kind of taken out of there. With golf, it's just rotation. You underestimate the ability, how important rotation is. And power through rotation is so key when it comes to hitting and throwing in baseball. So with golf, I mean, they love these speed sticks at the moment, which I've not tried. I'm not really sure if I'm a fan of it. It's just a weighted golf shaft, essentially. And they have these set routines, and you swing it right and left-handed, which I'm a big fan of. I think that's really underestimated in baseball. Swing left-handed as well as right-handed when you come to training, because you have two sides of the body. If your right side swinging to your right, you're better than you are to your left, then your left side is more prone to injury, which this whole method, these speed sticks in golf, is trying to eradicate the fact that you have an imbalance. Because in baseball, I think kids will always throw to one way, the way they hit the ball, and they forget to do the other side. And that's what golf's trying to educate their players that you can't just be good on your golf swing side. You've got to be good on the other, because you'll break down. At the end of the day, the season's a long, or it's a long round of golf, and the season's long in baseball, and it's a long golf season. You will break down. So trying to make yourself robust enough to last the long season. Because golf is, what, four-day events every week of the year? Now, I mean, it's generally 8 months, but now you can play pretty much. And that's what baseball's getting that way, especially. I mean, I had one kid the other day email me and say, "Coach, I've just finished my baseball season." You're like, "Well, kid, we've just started November." Yeah, I've just finished now. So golf's definitely to make yourself robust. Sailing, understanding push and pull. Don't forget that in the gym. Push and pull exercises are so key. And then football, just the ability to change direction and finding ways to make it specific to players and positions, and set up drills that incorporate doing what you want them to do, but also try and get a baseball involved as well, because if a baseball's not there, the buy-in's not 100%. And that's where it comes back down to your question on quality over quantity. Would the quality be better with the baseball, or are you better off doing the quantity without the baseball and getting loads of reps in nice and quick? Or is your drill better off being quality-based with a baseball?
Yeah, and you know, you brought up some great, great points about you know, the other sports. The thing I wanted to ask you specifically now was the sports science background. What have you taken from your sports science background into the game of baseball? Because, you know, baseball has been very traditional, and sports science is starting to change some of the traditional aspects of training in the game. What have you taken, whether it be in training or whether it be in competition or working with your coaches, anything that you can think of that's kind of changed the way baseball normally does things?
So for me, looking at the sports science side, I went through a phase of making players weigh in pre and post game just to look at the amount of weight we were losing. And kids could not believe the amount of weight that they were losing due to fluid loss, essentially. And these kids they were actually intrigued, which was really good. I did it for a dissertation, actually, for my master's.
Lloyd, I'm intrigued. Go ahead.
And you just neglect the natural. We are in Serbia, I think, and it was baking hot in Serbia. I mean, like, in your 90s sort of thing, every day. And we were playing in the middle of the day. And kids just don't drink enough water. It's a fact. And they would weigh in the morning. So you'd get a morning reading at breakfast. I'd get a reading before, and then I'd tell them if they were up or down on their weight. So if they needed to take on more fluids or they were okay. Because there's a formula that you can work out whether or not they're high or low. And it'll work out how many milliliters of water they are down if their weight doesn't match their normal weight. So then I just created a spreadsheet and it tells you that you need to drink 500 milliliters. So and then you say to the kids after he's weighed in, type in his numbers, right, you need to drink 500 milliliters. But kids were getting at 1.2 liters of water over a duration of a baseball game. So they'd weigh in as soon as we got back to the hotel after the game. And yeah, 1.5 liters, 1.2 liters of fluid. These kids were losing and they were still drinking during the game. It's not like they weren't drinking. They just physically, some kids couldn't get the fluids on board quick enough. And they were actually amazed at how much fluid that they were losing during these games. And it ended up educating them the importance of staying hydrated. And I created hydration posters, you know, like the NCAA give you them. And they're all around every university locker room, just about the color of your urine. We had them in all the hotel rooms to the point where kids would come up and tell me, "Hi, coach, I'm at a 4. All right, cheers, buddy. And I'm like trying to work out what the 4 is. And I'm like, okay, that's not bad. Try and drink a bit more fluid. But kids had this buy-in about hydration and urine and understanding what was right and what was wrong and where they are. And they took ownership of themselves. They wanted to get weighed in because they wanted to prove to me that they were at the optimum weight with regards to fluid retention and how much they had.
Now, is that something they had to drink? Like as soon as they got up, you started drinking water?
Yeah, so basically even at night, they would lose a lot of fluid. So breakfast, say we had a 6 o'clock breakfast. They'd come in, I'd be set up ready. They'd step on the scales and you'd be like, you need to go and drink a liter of water because you've gone to bed slightly dehydrated. But say there's no air conditioning in the hotel and the kids have just sweat all night long, they're down. And obviously, if you've got a 10 o'clock start, you've got to try and regain the liters before the game. Then you've also got to get ahead of the game because you're always going to be playing catch-up during the game. So yeah, that's how it kind of worked, is just trying to get them to understand fluids, fluids, fluids. And you obviously can't drink during the night, but you need to go to bed. Mm-hmm. They needed to find the balance because they didn't want to have to wake up in the middle of the night and disrupt a good night's sleep to go to the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to understand that themselves. So, and also trying to educate them that tonight's hydration is ready for tomorrow's performance. Because kids don't want to drink. It's so hard. They want to drink fizzy drinks. And we ban fizzy drinks when we go abroad. On any tours, I don't allow it. Just don't really see the need for it unless we are low with regards to sugar in our diet. But a lot of countries now, there's sugar in everything, every bit of food you have. So we generally just make them drink water. Don't really drink Gatorade or we have Lucozade over here and Powerade. We don't really drink that. We just literally make them drink the water and hopefully their diet's good enough to give them the other bits that they need. But that's kind of where we went. No, so, yeah, so that's kind of where we went with just trying to educate kids to hydrate.
Well, I love what you were doing, especially at the young levels, because, you know, you're talking about creating a very good habit. A habit that's tough to do when you get older is to get into that system of drinking a lot of water during the day and staying away from that sugar. Now, with all our talks, with all our experts, but it always reverts back to one thing, and this is the next part I want to talk about. It reverts back to where it all starts. You know, every national program, every federation, every national team, you know, success of that federation, the success of the national team comes down to the success of the youth program. You know, the young kids, you know, starting a good development program at the younger levels. What do you see the issues with the youth baseball, not only in Great Britain or any other sports that you, you know, or any other countries that you've been to, some of the issues that need to change when it comes to the development of young players?
For us, it's, I mean, I read a post the other day about developing a culture. And for me, culture, if you can get the right culture in your clubhouse or your team, you're onto a winner. It's just finding ways to develop culture for me. And I think it's always hard when you don't see, for us, it's not, ours is contact time. Ours is really easy. We just don't get to see the kids enough because they're spread all around the country. And it's really hard to get them all in one place. I mean, they're all over the world. We've got like 5 or 6 based in the US for every age group. And maybe 3 or 4 of them will come over every year. And it's really hard. Even at the senior level, we just can't get the contact time. But for us, we get success when we get the culture right from day one of the tournament. And you make kids take ownership of everything, like turning up with the right kit, being on time, carrying the equipment. All these little things go such a long way, and it's so easy to lose your culture or not have a culture altogether. So our biggest challenge is to get people all together and on the same culture, believing the same thing from day one of a tournament. Because some of these players may have never met each other before, especially ones who come over from the US. There's no way they've ever met some of these kids before, and we just get scouting videos of them. And we just go yes or no. And if it's a yes, you're invited to come and play with us in European tournaments. But these kids have never played with each other. So we have to try and develop team morale, team cohesion, and develop a culture within the ball club that we think breeds success. And then we hope that the abilities that we have carries us. And it's the same with the WBC. We had to put people who were from all different parts of the world. We had Bohemians, we had British players, we had players who play in Germany, players who were just high school coaches, and we had to try and make them a team in a 2-day space. And it was at the end of their season, and yeah, and it was just kind of, that was our attitude, was let's make these guys the best friends. Let's make the best friends here, and that's kind of what we did, and I guess that's why we had our success. Was we just made them have fun. I mean, just let them do their thing as players. So if you can develop a culture that you need to win, I mean, that culture of just let them have fun and be themselves won't work over a long season. But for the case of a 4 or 5 day tournament, that worked perfectly for us. But as a long season, you need to find your culture and your identity of what you want to be known as a club. I mean, you look at the New Zealand All Blacks. There's a great book called Legacy by Kier, his name is, about, he did an internship as a sports science assistant with the All Blacks. And it's incredible how the Maori culture is. You know, you now hear about a lot of teams now are sweeping the dressing rooms and stuff. The Maori started that. The New Zealand All Blacks started that culture. And their attitude is no one can do a job better than us. And that was their culture. That's what they wanted as a club. No one could do anything better than me. And that's great. And that works for them. But that wouldn't work for the England soccer team. You know, it wouldn't. That culture, that belief doesn't work. It's what works for you. And I think it comes down to if you've got a good culture and a culture that you believe in and it works for you as a club, then I think you're on to success. But that's a real hard challenge to find your culture and what you want to be.
And that's something that you guys have had to develop over the years from your younger teams all the way to the older clubs. It's something that, you know, takes time.
Massively, massively. It doesn't happen overnight. And it's getting the older players, the leaders in your team, to buy into your culture. Because it's all right as coaches sitting down and having, yeah, We want to be on time, the classics. We want all the equipment on the field before we get there. We want the players to warm themselves up. But it does come from the coaches, all of those things. But you have to have the buy-in from your senior players to do that. Like, some senior players be like, oh, well, I'm not going to carry the stuff, or I'm not going to make sure so-and-so's done this, and I'm not going to make sure I'm wearing black cleats, or I'm going to make sure that we don't wear sleeves that don't match the same colour as a jersey. You mean, you look at the Pirates organisation. Now, there's players that absolutely love that philosophy, but then there's other players within that organisation that despise it. They hate the rules. They hate how strict it is for them. But that's the Pirates' culture. And fair play to them. That's what they stick by. But I think every club needs to find their culture.
You know, speaking about that, you, as a, you know, strength and conditioning and sports science expert, you've had to, you know, when you first started with the Great Britain teams, you had to sell, you know, your program, you know, to your coaches, to your manager. What suggestions do you have for somebody jumping in you that has your background, that's going into another country or just a program, and now you've got to work closely together and communicate closely with your manager? I know you've got a great manager there by the name of Liam Carroll. As you said, he's been on the show before. I know Liam personally. You know, you're talking about a quality person, an open-minded person. Not everybody's like him. So sometimes, you know, there might be some defensive doors there that, you know, people aren't open to the strength and conditioning and the sports science. What's your recommendation how to approach all that?
I think for me, like you said, I was really lucky. I mean, Alan Dean, who's just incredible S&C guy, sports science guru. I mean, he's the brains behind everything, really. He'd been in before me, but he kind of knew. He was like, I want some new youth. And I was younger at the time and with some new energy. But my advice would be pick and choose your battles. You're not going to win everything. Like, there's stuff that I've done and I've lost. You know, like, every time we go and do stuff, we always have to do sprint mechanic drills because that's what the coaches want. But me doing 4 or 5 sprint mechanic drills 4 times a year, well, it's irrelevant. The kids can't remember them. We just make the kids look silly. And it took me 2 years for the coaches to go, you know what, let's get rid of running mechanic drills over these 4 days a year for 15.
So patience, got to have some patience, right?
Yeah, and because we realized that they just don't work. Our kids just look silly trying to do these A skips and B skips. Get rid of it. Let's do something else. Let's just do running races. Let's take the and the coaches didn't want that. But it took me 2 years for them to realize that A skips and B skips was just too hard for our kids and we made them look silly. So I decided to kind of let that battle go and let them win that. Let the coaches have that one and just grind it out and bite your teeth and let them coaches have what they want. But then you win something else. Like, I would win with agility drills involving a baseball. The coaches during the S&C practice, really, they didn't want baseballs around because they wanted kids to have 15, 20 minutes away from a baseball. Whereas I would do drills with a baseball and they just didn't want it. But after about the first session and they saw the baseballs and they saw how engaged the kids were, they were like, okay, you can have baseballs now. But you have to try and prove your drills without telling the coaches, come and do this. You have to get the kids to want to talk about the drill in the next practice. So whatever your drill was, you have to make it as fun as you can to try and get the buy-in from the players. Because at the end of the day, the coaches have to really listen to the players. If they like something, the coaches will want the players to do it again because they got better, because they liked it. They remember the drill. If they remember the drill, they remember the coaching points, which means they can implement them. So for me, I would say pick and choose your battles. You're not going to win them all. No way. So maybe set out a few of like 2 or 3. Like mine was to try and involve a baseball as much as possible so I could learn the game more. And warm-ups, try and make them as fun as possible but still ticking the boxes. And then I like people to talk a lot in my sessions. I don't like them to be quiet. And I think that was another one, was just let's have loads of noise and fun and challenge each other and compete. And I think I won the majority of them over the time. I've got my way and coaches believe in what I do, but I didn't try and change everything overnight. You just don't try and do it because you'll get sacked. and you'll fall out with the coaches, and that doesn't help you out. But just set yourself a small target of one or two, maybe three things that you want to do that the coaches don't already do or like, but do everything else the same. It might be the strength room, for example. I mean, over there, some people don't like to back squat, which I completely understand. You don't want to load through the spine. So they revert to front squat or lunges or unilateral stuff, which is absolutely fine. But for me, I like the back squat. But Alan Dean wasn't the biggest fan. But over time, I convinced him, with players going, I really like the back squat. When they get their feedback forms or when the coach speaks to them, I'm really enjoying the back squat at the moment. And he was kind of for a while, but then I monitored the loads so they weren't lifting heavy on the back squat. So they might only have been lifting 70% of their 1RM. That's how I got the buy-in for us then to allow us to load up the back squat a little bit more. I mean, I don't load it up massively because of the implications, but I could bring in the back squat and get more glute activation. And also, it was an easy exercise for players to do because the majority of them by then could move well enough and did have a good squat pattern in order to allow me to load it. But that was a battle I had to take time to win within my own department, because there's loads of battles out there, but you just don't try and win them all overnight. And just take your time. There's no rush. Remember, the players don't need to see an instant change. It can happen gradually, but an instant change on too many things will just become hard work for you. So just maybe one or two changes slowly and slowly. Get your feet under the door, understand how things work, and gradually make changes. Just come up with ideas and sit down with the coaches after a few months and be like, I want to implement this one thing. And they're like, you know what? We've got the games could have been rained off. Here, have this. One thing that I would like to say is that warm-ups or time before a game, I don't know how it is in high schools over there, but if you have a lot of time, why aren't, as coaches, you're going, let's run a sprint, 15-minute sprint session before a game? What harm does that do? You're going to do sprints to build up to the game anyway, but let's actually do a technical session before a game. Now, there's so many coaches out there that will go, no way are we doing any sort of physical exercise that's too strenuous before a game. But if you do it right at the right time and give yourself enough rest period and enough rest period during the exercise, then there's not a problem with it. It's also like a power training session. You could do a simple chilled out plyo session, which is using both legs, I don't know, vertical jumps, horizontal jumps, and a sprint session and sprints. And it only lasts 5 or 10 minutes, but all these kids have got better at something. And this is 5 or 10 minutes these kids would spend sitting down waiting or resting or letting the other team do warm up on the field. Yet you've got something out of that session. And that for me is something that a lot of players lot of coaches in all sports battle with, is that a warm up shouldn't be too strenuous or shouldn't be too taxing on our players. They don't want them fatigued. But if you sit down and you work out the numbers and the recovery at times between stuff, it's absolutely fine. And it could be a really good use of 15 minutes. It's 15 minutes of kids getting stronger or 15 minutes of kids getting better at something that they weren't doing the previous year. But it will take time for the head coaches to understand that, and you have to develop that bond and relationship and trust with your coaches. And you do that by not trying to bring in and change the world overnight.
Absolutely, and it certainly does help when you have either, you know, an administration or a leadership or a manager who's open-minded. And what I love about the game, Lloyd, nowadays, I go back 35 years in coaching. What I love about it in the last 5 to 10 years is that, you know, sometimes you have some people that are coming into the game who are not particularly baseball people, because maybe they only played it a little bit, or some haven't played it at all. And I've seen some great, great experts that have made a huge influence in the game. Because they bring out some outside the box ideas, whether they be scientific, whether they be medical, whether they be through trial and error or their expertise. And, you know, it's interesting. My wife doesn't watch baseball a lot, and at times she'll watch it and she'll say, how come the player doesn't do this at this particular time? And I'm thinking to myself, how come I didn't think of that? Because the reason I didn't think about it, because I'm thinking about how I was trained in the past. So I continue to do it that way. And what's about bringing experts like yourself, you open people's minds up. Yes, it does take some time to make changes. It depends on the individual. But what I want to ask you is this. What things are you guys doing differently in any aspect of the game? It doesn't matter whether it be the mental aspect, the training, the strength and conditioning. What's something or a couple things that you guys are doing different that you feel nobody else is doing, and why is it helping you?
I think for us, if you look, let's go back a few years when we were Jordan Edmonds, who played for us in the WBC. Mm-hmm. There was an era with him and a few other guys who will probably play in the Euros or will be in the mix for a Euros position this year with the senior team. So they're under 23 now. So they're all 23, 22. When we had them, we had a cohort of nine players, and we put a lot of time into them, the most amount of time we've put into athletes, just because they all lived in the same area, they all lived in the same town, and it was very easy to gain access to them. So what we did was we just looked after them. At the end of the day, I'd say we are very good at looking after players. We always try and make kids achieve their best, because we have to remember, in England, we've never coached a player to go on and play Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball in America or anywhere in the world. No kid's ever done it. The best we've had is kids go in and play in the German League, which is not a bad standard for European baseball, but it's not that level. So for us, we've always tried to look after players and give them that personal experience and tailor everything to them. And that cohort that we had with Jordan, when he was about 18, 17, just before they went off to university, we had a great S&C program. We had a gym that allowed them to train. We had an astro space where they could throw every day. And we literally just honed in on these kids because we knew that they had the aspirations of playing senior national team baseball. And we really just looked after them. We cared. I guess what we did really well that then was we cared for them, which I think can get forgotten. We didn't do anything outrageous, nothing that was unique. We just set a simple weight training program for them to do that was 5x5. Let's get strong. You're at an age, you're gonna have an increase in testosterone. So let's look to get you as strong as we can in the next 6-7 months. Let's teach you how to throw properly. Let's give you a swing that's fundamentally sound. And let's get your arm strength as high as we can through the long toss program. And that's all we really did, was that we just stripped it back to the bare bones, kept it really simple, and we cared about them, that they then didn't miss a training session, didn't miss a weightlifting session. They threw as much as we asked them to throw. They hit as much as we wanted them to hit. And they did a lot of the stuff on their own, but they trained 2-3 times a week. And they didn't want to let us down as coaches. And I think that's what's key about us, is that our players don't want to let us down as coaches. And also, I think they don't want to let themselves down when they go abroad. Because it is really, when you play against a team that trains day in, day out, like the French or the Dutch, and the Germans are going that way, it's really hard, and you don't have that opportunity to do it full time and eat, sleep and breathe it. It's really hard to try and compete at that level. But we try and make it so kids do it on their own because they believe in themselves and believe that they don't want to let anyone else down, and they don't want to let the coaches down and themselves down, and they know that we care. So I'd say that for us is what we do really well, is we show we care. And then the kids go, and that era especially went on and did everything that we asked. And Jordan got rewarded with it, with getting a place on the WBC roster, which was awesome for that kid, because he's been in baseball for a long time, gone out to Canada, did all right in Canada in college, but didn't quite do as well as he'd hope, I guess. And step on, obviously, he wanted to play minor league baseball or give pro a go, but it wasn't for him. But he put the work in and reaped the rewards. And he did it just because we cared, I guess. Which I think is really hard to do as a coach when you have a million and one things going on. But it's always, if a player knows you care, he'll he'll do one more rep, let's say.
Well said. Let me tell you, what a way to come to almost the end of the show, because, you know, Great Britain, in my opinion, in near future, you're going to start to see some players in professional baseball. Just a matter of time, because I know you guys are doing an outstanding job there, and I know you have quality people. I see you on Twitter. Guys, if you want to follow Lloyd Williams on Twitter, go to @Lloyd, which is LLOYD, then _ Williams, and the number one. Check him out on Twitter. A lot of great stuff. And Lloyd, you know, when we come to the end here, here's how we like to close it off. You know, there's so much to talk about, and, you know, there's a lot of learning that went on in the last 50 minutes here. And, you know, sometimes, you know, there may be something that I didn't ask a certain question. You wanted to say something. We've got coaches all over the world listening, along in the U.S., and also parents and players. If there's anything out there that, you know, that can help our coaches that you want to just give as last minute advice, it's your time, and then we'll close the show.
I guess for me is I love the saying KISS, keep it simple, stupid. Like, there's so much S&C, there's so much sports science stuff out there that just overcomplicates everything, or it makes it really hard. But if you're not doing anything, start doing something and you're rewarded. And just keep it simple. Cressy's incredible. Is it Baseball Simeone on Instagram? Incredible stuff. But not all that stuff applies to high school coaches, college coaches, even professional players. It doesn't always apply to you. So don't go and look at some of these high-end quality outfits, even at the pro level. Don't try and take that and do it in your place, because it won't work. It's not for you. But look at the simple stuff, the basic stuff that they do. And that generally applies to every baseball coach, even at the top level. Whether it's S&C, I don't know, drill work, don't overcomplicate it. Just keep it simple. If you're not doing something, start doing, for example, sprinting. Don't try and be a sprint or track coach. Kids will get faster by just running as fast as they can. And changing direction. They'll get better at changing direction by making them just change direction. And I think that's because a lot of people are nervous to start S&C and weight training. And I understand that. But pick simple exercises, and something is better than nothing, but don't overcomplicate it. Just keep it simple.
All right, great way to end it. That was Lloyd Williams, strength and conditioning coach and sports science coordinator for the Great Britain national team. It was a pleasure having you, Lloyd. That was a lot of fun. Learned a lot. Look forward to hopefully seeing you somewhere in the world internationally. And again, thanks for being on Baseball Outside the Box.
Thank you very much.
All right. Finally, thanks to everybody listening around the world. We want to thank you for being great listeners. If you're a new listener, thank you. Hope you continue with us. Please spread the word about the show on Facebook, which is Baseball Outside the Box. Forward it to everybody, along with Twitter @BaseballOut. All our social media is on the podcast website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. You know, if you need to email me anything, comments about the show, guests you'd like to hear, any questions about the game of baseball, love to hear from you. I love interacting with our fans and people that listen to the show. I am at PeterCaliendo@iCloud.com. Special thanks to Brian Crock, our producer, with the Lineup Media Group, and again, Lloyd Williams with the Great Britain national team. Do not miss our next show. We will be continuing the show with some of the greatest coaches and instructors from around the world. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. This is Baseball Outside the Box. Have a great coaching day and see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.